When your ideal customer's kids are begging every night to read your book, you've won. At Dinosaur House, we turn industry leaders into kids' book authors. We don't do it because it's a super fun thing to do, although it is. We do it because it's highly strategic. Imagine if every night your customers are being asked by their kids to read a book that your company made. Talk about brand affinity. You're helping your customers connect deeply with the most important thing in their lives, their kids, over something that they are passionate about that has to do with your industry. If you want to have a conversation with us about how your brand could become the author of a kid's book, just hit us up, dinosaurhouse.com. Hit the little button that says schedule a story design call. And we'll have a jam session together on just what your company's kids book could and should be.
Hi, all. My name is Rob Napoli. I am the founder of Rise Up Coaching. I'm passionate about training future and current leaders, especially as it relates to millennials and Gen Z. I'm also the co-founder of a company called Happier Group and the chief marketing officer at Vision at Village. And you're listening to The Purpose-Driven Entrepreneur.
What's up, Purpose-Driven Entrepreneurs? It's me, your host, Timmy Bauer, and my guest today is Rob. Rob, thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
I'm excited to be here, Timmy, and love the opportunity to be able to chat with you about purpose-driven entrepreneurship. It's a passionate topic.
Yeah, same. I can tell you, like, the thing that I wanted to talk to you about sounded really cool to me because I've thought of doing something similar with this podcast. I've now asked about 120 purpose-driven entrepreneurs what it is they're really living their life for, but I haven't yet thought much about how to package that content. But just to give our listeners some context, because I want to ask you about what you've been doing with Bare Necessities. Could you give our listeners some context about what that podcast is and what it is that you're trying to do?
Yeah. So the Bare Necessities of Entrepreneurship was something that I've been thinking about for a long time. And you listen to all these other podcasts about startups and entrepreneurship, and it's always about the company. It's like that major challenge, whether it's product market fit or defining a new category, how they overcame and built. And what I'm more interested in is not what the company success is. I can find that. But it was about what makes people want to be an entrepreneur. Because this shit is hard, right? And you have to be a little bit crazy to start a business and go through everything in entrepreneurship and campus. So I want to understand, why do people become entrepreneurs? What is that motivation to starting a company? What problem do they want to solve? What's the impact they wanted to make? And so I've wanted to focus a podcast just around the idea of, how did you become an entrepreneur? What's your journey to that? So that's what it's all about.
I agree. You do have to be, I think, your brain has to be wired differently than the average person to be an entrepreneur. And so I'm curious, from your experience interviewing people on that podcast, what have been some of the big insights that you've pulled out of your interviews? So you've done how many interviews? What are the types of people that you're interviewing? And what are some of the big insights that you've pulled out of that?
So great. So I've done episode 24 as of recording this, dropped today. But I've done, I think we've recorded the first 30 episodes. Yeah. So we've got 6 on deck. And I wanted to get a slew of different backgrounds. So I've interviewed a few Gen Z entrepreneurs, a few millennial entrepreneurs, and a few folks that started entrepreneurship late that were, you know, big wigs at big companies that at 40 or 50 is like, you know what? If not now, then when? And so I wanted to like get a range of different backgrounds and talking to people who run SaaS companies, who run subscription-based companies, who run mindset and leadership companies and fashion brands. I didn't want it to just be what we think of entrepreneurship, tech, SaaS. So I really wanted to get this really deep understanding. And I've learned a lot that, one, entrepreneurship comes from everywhere. In fact, one of the goals of my podcast is that I have an entrepreneur from every state in the United States and every country around the world. Why? Because entrepreneurship is everywhere. It's in all that we do. And yes, everyone can be an entrepreneur, but not everyone is meant to be. And so I want to understand where that comes from and what are those stories that drive that.
And what have you found out about, generally, like, how have you, obviously every entrepreneurship is coming from a different set of motivations and has a different set of like core components that make them competent at being an entrepreneur. But what have been some of the things that you've recognized as like running themes or
or have you bucketed out different kinds of motivations?
Yeah, great question. So I'm going to start by something that has always been my motivation, which is I've always been scared of being average. Right. And that means a lot of things to a lot of people. But to me, it was I wanted to make do something and continue to create impact. And as I've talked to all these entrepreneurs, as I'm learning and meeting with them, one of the things they all had, a vision or a calling to do something purposeful, whether it's solving a problem and figuring out that problem, or it's building something for themselves, or it's really purpose driven. And those are the three kind of buckets that you see these entrepreneurs. And there's a few entrepreneurs that are out there to make money, and that's to do something, but it's usually around solving a specific problem. So that's really cool to see and how that has played out versus those entrepreneurs that are very purpose driven. And so there's two kind of different veins, but usually it has around, it's all around impact and solving some sort of problem.
When we were talking before, you said that generally speaking, you meet a lot of Gen Zers who have a misunderstanding about entrepreneurship, particularly like what is a startup. But I'm curious, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so there's, we've gotten to this idea of startup cool, right? And startup, the word startup gets thrown around a lot. And there's companies like, we're a 10-year-old startup. We're a Series D funded startup. And when you actually look at startups, 0 to 1 versus scale-ups, and I look at scale-ups really anything post Series A, depending on how big your Series A is. But you definitely, once you hit Series B, you're not a startup anymore. You're a scale up. You're growing into a company and developing something. And we forget, and I talk to a lot of Gen Z, I want to go work for a 100-person startup. You really think that's a startup? They've been around for 4 years. They've been around the block a time or two. And I really want people to understand, what does that 0 to 1 look like? What does it mean to not know where your next paycheck is coming from? I did an amazing episode with Alex Batdorf. She is the founder and chief queen of Get Shit Done. And she said, she made a quote that I love, that don't do entrepreneurship for the gram, right? Do it because you want to make an impact, because this shit is gritty. It is tough and it is hard. And I think we've just glorified entrepreneurship, we've glorified what startups are into being like a WeWork or an Airbnb or an Uber, but those aren't startups. And so I really wanted to shift the focus on that 0 to 1 mentality and what it means to really start a business, not knowing where your next paycheck comes from, grinding something out, figuring out product market fit, talking to your first 20 customers, and really learning what that means to just be swimming in an open sea and trying to figure out where to go next.
I think also it can be limiting to think about entrepreneurship just in terms of like startup and funding and that sort of thing. Like my company, there's no funding and I'm not looking for funding. I'm very, very happy with bootstrapping Dinosaur House. And the company that I have in mind, I don't know if it's going to be a separate company or just another product that Dinosaur House sells, but I would bootstrap that one as well. But I'm not trying to build a tech platform, which you would need funding for typically. But yeah, I think that entrepreneurship in people's minds is way sexier than it is in real life.
110%, right? And it's, you know, we've also thought, and there's still plenty of people that want to be entrepreneurs, that's, I have a great idea, I'm going to go get funding, and I'm going to go build it. It's like, wait a second. In today's day and age, you need to have traction before you can get funding, right? So how do you go about building that traction? And what also-
That's not that, sexy.
Exactly. We also look at, there's tons of companies that want to build, and there's tons of entrepreneurs that I've met, which I love, you know, similar to your point. You know, if you had a multi-million dollar business and you had 10 employees, you would be happy because you made an impact, you built something, and you're giving others the opportunity to make an impact. That's entrepreneurship. And we don't look at it that way. We're like, oh, entrepreneurship is building a tech SaaS platform. It's like, no, you can be successful even if you're not a unicorn or not funded by running a multi-million dollar company. And that's one of the things that I want to make an impact. I would love to directly impact 10 new entrepreneurs who built a $1 million business on their own that can hire and train 10 others how to do that and build that and really understand what startup entrepreneurship is.
Yeah, I've not met personally anybody that is like super starry-eyed about the idea of being a unicorn, like being part of a unicorn company.
I most met of the people here in New York.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's almost like this is the comparison that I would draw, is similar to people that want to be an actor, but really they just want to be Robert Downey Jr. It's like, if you want to be an actor, that means that you love what it is to be an actor, not that you're just starry eyed about the life of celebrities.
You have to be addicted to the process. I think like one thing that I, like, you know, actually hearing you say that and like thinking about this, the one key thing that I've learned about everyone I've interviewed on my show, they're all addicted to the process, right? They're not looking for quick fix success, microwave community. They're looking for, how do I build and grow and learn? And that, I think, what sets those apart. That's why I say everyone can be an entrepreneur, but not everyone is meant to. And it's being addicted to the process. And that actually breaks down to, when we think about Gen Z and we're talking about startups and entrepreneurship, there's like two camps of Gen Z. The Gen Zers that go to school and like learn about entrepreneurship as it is, but then there's a ton of entrepreneurs that don't call themselves entrepreneurs. They call themselves content creators and streamers and small business owners and freelancers. Little do they know that they're actually building something that is entrepreneurial, and they don't identify as entrepreneurs because to them, entrepreneurship is maybe a little taboo or not what they want to be seen as, because they feel like they're not one, they haven't owned that, or because they don't want to be seen as, I'm building some tech platform, I'm creating content. And I think that it's just really important to show what that means, that entrepreneurship both is a title and a mindset.
Yeah, yeah. And when you say addicted to the process, what is the process?
Everything, right? Are you able to get up and look at your email and figure out how I'm going to structure my day? I have customer calls. I've got to do payroll. I got to go collect, you know, many people don't understand, like maybe you've done this. I've had to do this. Go chasing down paychecks from clients that 100%. You provided a service for.
One of the most infuriating parts of building a company is how can I get people to pay on time? Like they said they would.
Exactly.
And if they're not going to, how can I get that to change?
Right. Especially if that paycheck is what you need to pay your rent next month. Right. And you have to be willing to have and lean into hard conversations and set real expectations. Right. In that process of, I need to get this out the door. And a lot of times people are more focused on the end result and not about, I need to go make 100 phone calls. I need to send out the email blast, or I need to go get 10 customer discovery calls this week, or I need to go create TikTok content or real content, but I don't want to create content today. You have to be able to switch that gear on. There's different ways of how you structure, but you got to be able to go do that and give it your all, even if that's not your number one skill set.
Yeah. Also, this whole conversation has been very geared towards solopreneurship. But I would love for more people to open up their mind and not think, you know, they're either thinking unicorn tech platform with lots of funding and big team, mm-hmm. or they're thinking solopreneurship. But I would love for more people to just think about talent arbitrage and like hiring a small team of people mm-hmm. and doing something that people need.
Yeah. So there's a book that I read called Who Not How.
Yeah.
By Dan Sullivan. That changed a lot for me. Because one of the first things that I did as I was building Rise Up is I went and got a VA who can assist in a lot of things that were causing me and my ADHD and OCD to get lost in the sauce, take that off my plate. And then as I started growing and making some sales and building the business, I brought in somebody to help with content scheduling and content creation, i.e., helping lay out a plan. I'm really good at creating the content when I know what I need to create, but putting that plan in place, I could put a plan in place for others, but putting a plan in place for yourself is hard. So I realized I can build content like what I'm good at, right? CMO of Village, I'm good at putting content calendars in place. I'm good at putting a strategy in place. Sometimes it's hard to do it for yourself because it's your baby and you need to bring those outside eyes in to help you. And there's so much talent out there. So who do you have in your network that can help you do the things that either A, you don't want to do or not good at? And how does that benefit them monetarily? How do you structure that? What, you know, sometimes what are they getting out of it too? There's so much talent out there and so much opportunity to, as you said, bring that talent arbitrage together, bring a small team to go make magic happen. And realizing as an entrepreneur, you don't have to do everything, right? And you're not going to be good at everything. And the best entrepreneurs learn that they can give up control and find people that can help them do things better than they can do it themselves. And that, when people get over their ego, that's when scale really happens.
I agree. Rob, I started this podcast so I could ask purpose-driven entrepreneurs what it is that they're really living their life for. When you think about the question of what you want to be remembered for when you die or what you're really living life for, what jumps out to you as most important?
This is something that's changed over the years. And at 34, I still don't know if I have it figured out. But
okay,
the impact that I really am passionate about is there's kind of two things, right? One is I have a goal that I want to help 10 people become an entrepreneur of a $1 million business, right? That's one. But two is a little bit more focused on future of leadership, right? Is how do we get more people to be confident in themselves and understand that their journey is impressive because it's theirs? And how do they talk about that? And how do they leverage those skills for success? Whether that's entrepreneurship or being the best employee at a big company, to understand that you are enough, right? I started off by saying I was afraid of being average. But we have to realize that we're all impressive beings. And we all walk a path very different from everybody else. And when we start actually owning our lives and owning that belief in ourselves, man, that's where people really show up and show out in different areas of their life and their passion. If I can help unlock that in people, that to me is also really, really important. That's something that I want to be known for.
Why is that so important to you? Yeah, why is that so important to you that it's one of the things you want to hang your life on?
Because I chased so many things for the glory and I didn't think I was enough. And there are some real things that happen. I'm a twin. So my whole life's been competing. My twin is my best friend. He is my soulmate. Right. And more ways than people can really understand. If you don't have a twin, like it's something special. And, you know, I had a really impressive family full of athletes and coaches who won national championships, and an uncle went to the MLB, all these different things. Right. And so I just always felt that I had to compete to be memorable. And I chased so much of the wrong stuff. I was a people pleaser. And it wasn't until I started taking ownership of my journey in my life that I realized that I'm impressive in my own way. And that's what I hope others can do, because we get this influencer society, right? Tells us that we need to be bigger than we are versus yep. We just need to be us and engage, show our social soul through what we do. So it's why I wrote a book all about mastering your brand with authenticity and intentionality. How do you be an engager? How do you create meaningful relationships in life that are going to make great things happen?
That is a great question to be asking yourself. And I think it's one of the ultimate questions to ask in life is how do you be an engager? Somebody that can build meaningful relationships. Mm-hmm. I'm a kids book author. I believe that part of leaving a legacy is reaching kids. Just for fun, Rob, what's a topic or idea you'd make a kids book about if you could?
Oh, there's two things. Also, I did some stalking and love some of the TikTok stuff you've been creating around your
Thank
book
you.
And some of the
impact. Thank you.
In fact, I went and looked at it on Amazon and was like, this is so cool, right? Lucas the Dinosaur?
Yeah, Lucas the Dinosaur Entrepreneur.
And, you know, that sparked something in me. It really yep. did. From when we talked, and I was like, you know, this is awesome. We don't give our youth credit enough, right? Like my 4-year-old niece can call me on FaceTime and play with apps while she's talking to me and then close it out.
Yep.
You know, we have kids that can play Madden and master video games that are very intricate.
Yeah.
And so there's two topics. One is entrepreneurship. I love that. Right. And so that's why I looked at that. But the other one is this idea of online social soul, right? Our social brand. And can we teach kids how to manage online better earlier? Because I tell you what, I'm glad I didn't have social media in high school and college the same way they do now.
Yeah.
And that scares me. That scares me. If I become a parent, that scares me for my kid. So I would love to create a book around that and helping young kids early start thinking about how they portray themselves and how they engage in an online world and do it the right way and not the wrong way.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be very cool. Ooh. My other for fun question for you, Rob, is what is something that you suck at right now that a year from now you want to be great at?
Ooh. That is a great question.
Thank you. It's my favorite questions to ask. Talk about a tool for building relationships. Asking somebody what they wish they didn't suck at is a good tool for building relationships.
You know, I mean, even just being a, you know, talk about engaging, you know, asking great questions. It's so easy for us to want to talk at people all the time.
Yeah.
And we know, like, you know, first real sales, like the sweetest thing that somebody can hear coming off your lips is their name.
Yeah.
And everyone loves to talk about themselves. So ask great questions. If you can do that, you'll crack the code. One thing that I want to get better at, you know, is, and I was actually, it was funny that we talked about this. So I was talking with my coach this morning about, there's two things. There's a personal and a professional goal. So I want to talk about professional one first, because I talked to my coach about this morning. And that I am a gamer. When the lights come on, if I have short deadlines, I can do more in 2 hours than most can do in 8. But if you give me 2 weeks to do something, I'm going to procrastinate the hell out of that.
Yes. Right?
So I really, one thing I want to work on is my productivity and how I schedule and realign my day to win each day.
Yeah.
And I've been working on that, but I haven't really put much intention into it the way that I should be. And as I talked with my coach, we put a plan in place. So that's what I want to be like in a year from now. I want to be able to really drive that forward and know how to win each day better.
Yeah.
So that's the professional one that I want to work on.
Yeah. I like that a lot. One of the things that I've learned over the years, and I can't even take credit for it because I have a tremendous VA. Like I will cry when she leaves. But she has gotten so good at being an extension of me. So I've been able to outsource so many things that are like Timmy tasks. Like they're on my plate. They're using my email account, you know, but like getting to offload so much to her and then simplifying my days down to the point where I'm doing things that I really get excited about.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I'm still very much like a yes person. I like to go do, you know, I can't sit still. I take everything on. So this goal of this is, how do I do that better with intention? How do I delegate the right way? And then what does Rob need to take on and do each and every day? And one of the things that coming down to engagement and being an engager, one thing I never miss on my calendar is the first 20 minutes of my calendar. And that's go engage with 5 posts a day. Engage with 5 meaningful pieces of content on my social platforms. I never miss that because that is so important to me. It's what I talk about, it's what I breathe about, it's what I do. And I block my calendar off in really specific chunks. And so, you know, just really leveraging that path to doing that. I'm really excited just to continue to get better at doing that as I continue to take on more responsibility and different things I'm doing and building a business and, you know, building what we're doing at Village. So it's fun. It's a great challenge to have. And it's one that is, I can't wait to see where I end up in, you know, 6 weeks, 6 months, and a year from now.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard this quote a few times and in a few different ways, and I'm probably going to butcher it, but the way that I would say it would be, goals don't accomplish things, routines do. So like, it's okay to set goals, but you have to set routines that accomplish those goals or you won't accomplish them. And they have to be routines that you'll actually do.
So I love that. Cause, I remember seeing, somebody put this on Instagram and it was really poignant. I loved it. Cause I talk about, reason why so many people fail, there's studies on this, is they set too big of goals, right? Like New Year's resolutions, and you're gonna fall apart like to this point of routine. And this is why I talk about addicted to the process. And I remember he said it in a way that's like, what does success look like? And, you know, creating systems of success. I really like how he said that. Mine is like, you take mini goal markers, right? It's like you're climbing up a mountain. It's like, you're not gonna get to the top. So I'm gonna put that 5 feet in front of me and go after that. And the other thing I don't do is I don't try to put a lot of time on my goals, right? Because life doesn't happen linearly. And what we do is we put this goal in place. We put a time on it. It's like, I'm not there by this date. It's never going to happen. F that. It could still happen. Things that I wanted to happen in my life still haven't happened. And some of them happened later than I wanted to. But But when I start thinking about creating routines and processes and moving that goal marker each day at a time, I've seen a lot more success that way.
Yeah,
and that's why I say all these entrepreneurs are addicted to the process, addicted to those routines they put in place for themselves. And that's one thing that I know that I'm continually getting better at every day. And I love it. As I talk about it, as I do it, it's impactful.
Yeah. And figuring out what your process should be, I think, is such a self-discovery act that I would not expect somebody who's 20 years old to know the answer to that question. Like, it takes time to figure that out. You have to really do some deep soul searching work on yourself to figure out like what that means for you.
So I have a question for you is, do you think that you have your shit figured out now at your age? And because you're, if I'm not mistaken, you're a father now, right?
No, I'm not. Thank God. I'm not.
Okay. No, you're just building kids books. Okay.
Yeah. I don't have my shit figured out, but I do. I recently how long ago was it? Maybe the beginning of this year, I went on this retreat called Living a Better Story. I can't stop talking about Living a Better Story. It was such an impactful time for me. I'd always known that these are the things that I'm doing, that these are the things that I want to be doing. Like, I've known since I was a kid that I wanted to be a story artist. I didn't know exactly what form it would take, but I knew I wanted to make art in the form of stories, like stories in the form of art. And when I was 17, my little brother was 4, I started reading him kids' books and I was like, oh, I think I could do this. And this is story art. So I started making this kids' book, Billy the Dragon, for my little brother. And then when I worked at Disney as a performer, I got a bunch of encouragement from friends to publish it.
Yeah.
And I went in, I went the full entrepreneurial route to being a kids' book author and just bought a big print run of copies and started knocking on elementary school doors. And then over the years, I just had to keep figuring out different ways of selling those kids' books to the point where I could get to where I'm making I'm paying my bills off of kids' book sales, which was a grind and took many years to figure out. And all that time, if you were to ask me, like, why are you doing this? I would have said, oh, this is just my favorite sandbox to play in. And I didn't really know the answer to, like, why does this matter to me so much? And when I went on this retreat, there was a lot of like deep soul searching work that was done. And I figured out, like, at the end of the day, there's a couple of things. One, I didn't have a great relationship with my dad. I shouldn't say it that way. My dad's a great person. I didn't feel very close to my dad a lot of the time that I was growing up. And then as an adult, I didn't feel close to my dad at all. And seeing that kids' books are a vehicle for connecting parents with their kids is very powerful to me. So I'm very driven by that, by like, I want to connect parents meaningfully with their kids using this vehicle of kids' books. And like with Dinosaur House, how cool is that? Because I'm taking the things that mom and dad do for a living and I'm creating a vehicle with the person who's the customer. I'm creating this vehicle that like your audience are going to be able to, are going to have a book that they can connect with their kids over, you know?
I love that. First of all, low key flex Disney performer. What was your role in Disney?
I've been debating about how to talk about it because they really like indoctrinate you into the idea that like you're not allowed to talk about what you did as a performer at Disney. But I wore green tights and flew around Neverland.
How come it doesn't surprise me? If you had asked me the question, what do you think I was going to say? Peter Pan. So I absolutely love that. The other thing you brought up a really amazing point about the story of connecting and developing this relationship. Cause you know, my father is one of the best men I ever knew, but my relationship has always been great, right? He was always my coach. I remember he was my boss, my first boss at 13 when I started working for a pizza restaurant, 13, 14 years old.
Okay.
And you know, I actually learned a really tough skill from him, which is when you're and I do this with my employees and people will think I'm crazy, is I can separate business from personal. When it's work, it's work. I didn't use always, but like my dad would yell at me at work. And then out as we got in the car driving home, he'd be talking to me like nothing happened. And he's like, and I was like, Dad, like, how can you just act because things wrong? He's like, Rob, that was at work. Like, I'm over it. Like, I'm sorry if that bothered you, but you messed up at work. I had to make sure you knew that you messed up. But like, I'm not letting work affect my time with you. My parents were divorced, so I didn't get to spend all the time with my dad. So I split back and forth. My dad's like, I'm not letting that affect my time with you because that was work.
That would be jarring.
It was, but it also taught me a really important life lesson in business, and that I know how to not take things personally when stuff happens.
Yeah.
And I can separate business from personal. A
That's
lot of people
valuable.
Don't know how to do that. And sometimes you have to realize that business is business. And especially when you're doing business with friends, like one of my businesses, Haptic Group, one of my best friends, Phil DeVecchio, is my business partner. And we, before we even started a business together, we laid out all the roles and responsibilities. We laid out a bunch of stuff, and we laid out what is business, and we cannot let it affect our friendship. And if we get to a point that we're starting to let it affect our friendship, we need to have a conversation.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, one of the biggest things that led to the success of Haptic Group, and the fact that we're still running that business today. And we have brought on a team out of Mexico that is awesome, that runs day to day, that allowed me to build Rise Up Coaching. But it was because we were able to do those things. So that was just one of those things that, as you bring that up, I feel very strongly connected to and understand kind of that growing up, some of those things.
Cool. Well, I appreciate the question, Rob. And this has been a really fun conversation. Where are you most active on social, and where should listeners connect with you?
LinkedIn and Instagram. So LinkedIn, it's Rob Napoli. Instagram, it's rise_.robnap. And I'll make sure to get those over to you.
Yeah.
I post a lot of great content on Instagram through Reels. I do have a TikTok. I'm still learning TikTok, but I'm definitely bigger on Instagram, and LinkedIn's my big channel. So you can find me there. And if anyone out there listening wants to talk about entrepreneurship, branding, all these things, shoot me a note. Let me know that you found me through Purpose Driven Entrepreneurship Podcast, and I would love to set up a conversation.
Awesome, Rob. Thank you so much for being on.
You bet, Timmy. Thank you.